How's everybody doing this morning? You guys doing all right? Good. It's good to see you. As Matt said, my name is Adam, and I'm the Connections Pastor here at Commonway. And we are in week three of our series called Relate. And so far, Matt has spent time talking sort of broadly, talking about different elements that sort of influence all of the relationships that we're in. This week, in week three, we're actually going to zoom in and look at one particular kind of relationship. And we're going to see actually that this kind of relationship is something we experience throughout all of life, and that is friendship. But before we fully get into that, I just want to geek out for a little bit. Because sometimes I get like really excited about things that no one else gets excited about. And one of the things I've learned so far is that when I speak up here is that I have a captive audience. And so you're going to geek out with me. And this is related, by the way. Like, this is going somewhere. So when it comes to friendships, when it comes to relationships, when it comes to interacting with other human beings, social psychologists have done a ton of research, and they've discovered that we have these sort of circles of relationships. And this first circle is roughly 1,500 people on average. That's the most people that you can reliably put a face with a name and a name with a face. That number sort of fluctuates for some people. Some people can go up to 2,000. Other people can't get past 1,000. But in general, there are about 1,500 people that you can go, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure that this is that person's name, and this is who they sort of belong to, and they sort of go together. But 1,500, that's sort of the cap. You can't remember more than that. There's a circle inside of this of 150 people. Now, 150 people, this number has a specific name. It's called the Dunbar number, and this is where I get really, really nerdy, right? The Dunbar number says that the maximum number of relationships that you can actually maintain is about 150. And they've done a lot of research in a lot of different areas to figure out why this number is what it is. We're not going to dig into that. But basically, this is 150 people. These are the people that, if you're having a giant backyard party, these are the people that you're going to invite, right? You have about 150 people that not only do you know their name and their face, but you actually know like how they relate to one another. And you maybe know a thing or two about them. You can remember how you met them, what that first instance was. And this circle of 150 people, these are considered loose social connections. The people, it actually plays a pretty important role in our life, these sort of networking connections and relationships, but they aren't the things that influence us the most. There's another circle inside of this that is made up of just 15 people. And this circle we're going to call the influencers. These are the 15 people that if you're having a dinner, these are the people that you're going to invite over. You know them, you know where they work, you know sort of a little bit about their story, about how they got to where they are. These are the 15 people that influence you. They don't necessarily decide the course of your life or maybe even your week or your month, but these are the 15 people that know things about you. They know what's going on. They know what you're struggling with. They know what you're excited about, and they influence you in a lot of ways, both that we recognize and maybe even ways that we don't recognize. And then there's one more circle right in the middle, and this is the circle of five. Now, research says that we are the average of the five people that we spend the most time with. So think about that for a second. Who are the people that you spend the most time with? Don't think of like your five closest friends, though they might be the same, but who are the five people that you spend the most time with? Because research shows over and over and over again that when it comes to these five people, they're going to actually reproduce themselves through you. So maybe it's your mannerisms, as Matt has corrected many times, mannerisms, the way that you sort of gesticulate, right? Those are going to be sort of taken in from your tight social circle. The words that you use, the way that you spend money, the kinds of food that you eat, your financial habits, whether you save money or spend money, whether you take vacations regularly or don't take vacations regularly. The five people that you spend the most time with actually determine a lot of what you do day in and day out. So it seems that if we focus on these five people and even the circle of 15, that who we spend our time with matters. Would you agree to that? Even before you sort of hear about these circles, you would probably agree, yeah, the people that you spend your time with matters. There's an old saying, I assume it's old because I don't remember hearing it when I grew up, but I think it probably predates me. I don't smoke and I don't chew and I don't run with girls who do. Did I get that right? It's pretty close. Pretty close. So yeah, we sort of know this. Who we spend time with matters. and specifically with these 5 and these 15. And we're going to sort of focus on those two circles this morning. Who are the people that are in that 5 and who are in that 15? And even though some of this might sort of sound like pop psychology, right? Like I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a social scientist, so I don't actually study these things, but I read the research and it sounds true and it sounds like it would make sense. But if we actually look, we can see that this is actually based on ancient wisdom. If you read Proverbs 13:20, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. So that seems to line up with that, right? Proverbs 18:24, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. And then in 1 Corinthians, Paul says, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And Paul is quoting somebody there, probably a playwright from the time in Athens. And so this is wisdom that comes to us through the Proverbs, through ancient literature, and we see that who we make friends with matters. Good friends will help us be good. Bad friends will help us be bad. That's sort of like the simplified version of what we can take away from those Proverbs. And I want to point out just sort of an overall theme in this message. I'm drawing on a lot of what I've learned from Tim Keller and Reuben Welch and a few others. So there's a lot of ideas in here that aren't mine that I've sort of brought together. But I think you'll see a clear picture in here that really emphasizes that we need to think about who are those 5 people that are sort of reproducing themselves through us and who are the 15 people that are influencing us in ways that we see and in ways that we don't see. Tim Keller actually says it specifically like this. He says, Proverbs says, you're not going to be a wise person or lead a wise life unless you are great at choosing, forging, and keeping terrific friendships. You will not make it at life unless you are great at friendships. That puts a lot of pressure on friendships. Like when I read that, I was like, oh man, like this seems like it's really important, but it also seems like it's really hard, and I'm afraid that I'm going to miss the mark and pick the wrong friends and just end up just completely off the rails. But I think you'll see that that doesn't have to be the truth. That doesn't have to be the way that it goes. But I think you would mostly agree with me that in the state that we're in today, in our culture, in America, that we actually experience what some people call relational poverty. We think about poverty, we think about sort of material wealth or financial wealth, but there's actually relational poverty as well. The idea that we don't have the relationships that we need in order to be healthy and to thrive and to be integrated into community. 25 years ago, they were already doing research on all these kinds of things, and in 1995, research showed that the average American had 6 close friends. Those are 6 people that you could pick up a call at 2 a.m. and say, help, I need you. Whatever the crisis was, they had 6 people who would come and they would show up and they would do things for one another. So 6, that's pretty good, especially if we think about the average of 5 or the circle of 15. 6 is a solid core. So this is in 1995. What do you think that number is today? It's 2. Yeah, I heard several people say 2. On average today, people say that they have 2 close friends. Now 2 is better than none, right? They have 2 people that when life gets hard, when your marriage is struggling, when your kids are off the rails, when you have doubts, when you have struggles, on average, Americans say they've only got 2 people that they can turn to and say, I need help. I'm reaching out. I need your strength. I need your support. And in return, they can only offer themselves and their strength and their encouragement to 2 people as well. Now, in this most recent iteration of this survey, only 2 people are close friends. But a full 25% said they have 0 close friends. Like, that is relational poverty. Like, living in a society where there are more people than ever, and we have all this technology and social institutions that are supposed to help draw us together, we're actually in a place where most of us don't have many close friends, and 1 out of 4 of us would say that we don't have any close relationships. Now, despite these things, Proverbs insists that friendship is not only valuable, but it's essential. It's important to our well-being. So you ask yourself, why in our culture today do we have such relational poverty? Why are people without friends? I think there are a lot of reasons. It's a complex issue. There's a lot of variables to think about. For one, seasons of life. I've talked to a lot of people recently who are recently out of college or even into their late 20s and early 30s who say, man, when I was in high school, when I was in college, Like, I was surrounded by my peers who had common interests, and we were doing things together, and I had no problem making friends. But as soon as I graduated, or when I moved to that new city, or after I had kids, it got a lot harder to have friendships. So there's seasons of life. As you get older, friends pass away or they move away. And so I think that makes it harder to have close friends. We live in a busy culture. There's like this sort of badge of honor of like, oh, I'm so busy, my schedule's so full. And we pack it so full, either of taking the kids to this or working extra hours or binging on Netflix. We've got really busy schedules, and so we don't have time for friendships, and we don't value them in a way that we're going to clear the schedule to make time for friendships. If you look at the magazine rack, how many magazines at the store are about, like, the latest and greatest relationships, right? Like, there's no magazine that's like, hey, check out who became friends with who. It's like, who's sleeping with who, and who's dating who, and, you know, the tabloids reporting all of this scandalous stuff in sort of the romance area. But when it comes to actual friendships, that's not something that we've prioritized publicly in our culture. And so when we're busy, we don't make time for those relationships. We live in a mobile culture. It's easier than ever for people to move. My family and I, we were in Oklahoma for 4 years, and we came back, and we're a year and a half into being back, and we're still in a place where we're developing that circle of 15 and that circle of 5. So it takes time, but when people move, and especially with Ball State, right, or Taylor, Anderson, when you live in a college city, it makes it harder because you may have somebody around only for 4 years, and then they move. And so there's a challenge to that. We just live in a mobile society. Social media, I think, actually in some ways makes it easier, but it also makes it harder. I'm a big fan of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all those things. I'm not very good at Snapchat because I'm too old, I guess. But the reality is that those connections that we make in social media in some ways make it harder. The average college student today has 500 friends on Facebook. But when asked how many of them are actually your friends, they say only 75. But that's using still a pretty broad definition of friend. When you push them and say, okay, but how many of them are your close friend? They'll say at most it's 10. 10 people that they see on a regular basis and connect with outside of social media. So social media allows us to stay up to date, to know just a little bit, but actually not developing that close relationship. This month, I've actually been taking a break from social media for the past 24 days now. I haven't used social media at all. And one thing that I've noticed is that I find myself going, oh man, I don't know what's going on in my friend's life. And it actually, I mean, if I'm honest, it actually changed my behavior. I haven't picked up a phone to call people that I normally don't call, even though I've thought more about them and said, oh man, since I don't have Facebook, I don't have Instagram, I don't know what's going on in their life, but I actually haven't taken the action to reach out to them and connect, which points to me that I actually use social media as a way to sort of stay connected and at least know what's going on, but I'm still not engaged with them in an active and meaningful way. But I think we also, maybe more than anything else, we just live in an individualistic culture. It's about what we're focused on, what we're doing, what we're interested in. And so it's very easy to think about what we're doing, what's in front of us, and to sort of forget about what's going on in the lives of those that we know and what they're going through, what they're struggling with. There's a lot of reasons why we might be experiencing a lot of relational poverty, but despite these things, Proverbs insists that friendship is important, that it is valuable, that it is necessary. Now, even when I say the word friendship, and I've said it a lot so far, I feel a little bit uncomfortable, even in deciding like that's what I was going to talk about, praying about it, reading, trying to figure out, okay, what's the angle on relationships. I held off on friendship for a long time because friendship feels sort of like a squishy word, like it's sort of quaint and comfortable and not all, like if I say, hey, we're gonna talk about friendship today, some of you are like, okay, great. I'm like, I'm not pumped about that, but I guess that's a good thing to talk about. And so even I have some self-consciousness about talking about friendship because it's just not something that we talk about publicly very often, especially men, right? For women, they talk about their friendships in a very different way than men do. But what I want to do is walk through what does a friendship actually look like? Like, how do we find them? How do we define it in a more holistic way so that it doesn't feel like this sort of squishy, soft, Hallmark kind of thing, but actually seeing it as a central relationship in every one of our lives, that it's important, that it will help determine the path of our life. And so I want to do those two things. I want to say, how do we find relationships, And then how do we build them? And how do we sustain them? Friendship must be discovered and forged. So first, discovery. How do we discover friendships? Just four quick thoughts on this. That true friends are relatively rare. If I ask my four-year-old or my seven-year-old, you know, who's your best friend? It's likely to change day to day, depending on who they ate lunch with or who was playing kickball at recess. I might even get an answer of like, everyone's my best friend. But we know that's not true. As you get older, you know that you just don't have the time or the emotional energy to invest a deep, meaningful relationship with everybody. Even those circles prove that, right? 150 is the most relationships that you can actively maintain, and those aren't even deep relationships. That's just sort of staying up to date roughly, seeing each other once a month, that kind of thing. So we know that true relationships, true friends, are relatively rare. You can't force it. The guy who walks up and says, hey, my name's Adam, do you want to be friends? That guy's creepy. That guy's weird. And there is, I mean, as soon as that sentence comes out of that person's mouth, you say, okay, I can never be friends with that person. So trying to force a friendship actually proves that it will never, ever happen. But friendships are not magic. I think I can be prone to think this, that, man, well, there's nothing I can do. Like, I am who I am, and that person's who they are. And if our paths cross and the sprinkles fall through the sky and the magic dust makes us friends, poof, we're friends. That's fantastic. But the reality is that there are things that we can do to put ourselves in a position to make friends, to develop relationships. If you're at home every weekend binging on Netflix, there's probably a pretty low percentage chance that you're going to develop a close relationship with somebody, unless they're there with you, watching Netflix with you. If you're an introvert, you might say, man, it's just hard. Like, I don't like being around large groups of people. Okay, so don't be around large groups of people, but you have to be around people in order to develop relationships with people. So I think we have to push back this notion that friendships just happen. They either happen or they don't happen, and recognize, as we'll talk in a little bit, there are specific things that we can do that put us into a posture and a place where we can develop relationships intentionally. And at the core of any friendship is discovered a shared perspective. Maybe a friendship starts through a love of board games. And so you meet up and you play board games, and out of that develops something because you learn more about each other. But it's that shared perspective of, man, I love playing games. It's fun. And I love playing games with other people. Maybe it's running. You love to run. And so you meet somebody. I'm training for the mini marathon. And so you guys start talking about that. You go on some runs together, and you have this shared perspective on fitness and wellness and taking care of your body and exercise and those kinds of things. So there's always a shared perspective of some kind. It doesn't always have to be this grand perspective on all of life, though sometimes it can be. It could be a social justice cause. It could be an injustice that's taking place in Muncie or in the world, and you say, man, this just really makes me upset when I hear about this happening. And somebody else says, me too. And so you develop a relationship around that shared perspective. So friendships are discovered. But they can't only be discovered. They actually have to be developed after that. You can't just discover a friendship. It actually also has to be forged. Now, we're going to look at these four elements of forging or building a relationship, building a friendship. And these are trademarks of a healthy relationship, but they're also trademarks of what it takes to build one. So when you meet somebody for the first time, you're probably not going to have all four of these elements of forging or building a relationship in place. But you're going to have some inkling of where it began and how you can build it. So first and foremost, a friendship is constant. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all times, a brother is born for a time of adversity. So in the highs and lows, season after season, a true friend is reliable. They're there, and you know that they're there, and you are there for them. The verse says a friend loves at all times, but it says that a brother is born for a time of adversity. We all have families, and some of us have strong, healthy families. Some of us have had trials and struggles in our families. But some of us know that in a family, man, if things go wrong, family's going to step up. They're going to help you. Like, when things are hurting and broken, they're going to help you. But a friend is actually going to be there with you in the in-between times. And they're going to be there with you with the highs as well. They're going to celebrate with you. Some of you might have close friends in your family, but by default, the Proverbs say
that a friend, in some ways, sticks closer than a brother. A friend is with you high and low, good and bad. They're constant and they're reliable. A true friend is careful. Proverbs 25:17 says, "Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. Too much of you and they will hate you." How many of you had a friendship ruined because somebody did not know they were coming over too frequently, right? Maybe that's more common in families, I don't know. But careful, what is a careful friendship? That doesn't mean you're walking on eggshells. It doesn't mean that you're afraid of them. It doesn't mean that you treat them with kid gloves, but it means that they know you. It means that they understand you, how you're wired, what your preferences are. If you're a morning person, if you're an evening person, if you're a vegetarian, if you only eat meat, like, it's possible, right? But true friends are careful. They think about you, and when they're interacting with you, they're considerate of you. They understand what's going to develop your relationship more, and you understand more about them. This is actually my favorite example of this. Proverbs 27:14. I actually shared this at my small group this last week. "Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing." So if you are a morning person, stop it. You are cursing. Candor. A true friend has candor. That means telling the truth, saying what needs to be said. Proverbs 27:6 says, "Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." When I think back on my best friends in different seasons of life, I instantly go to the stories where I was in a bad spot, or I was doing something stupid, or I didn't even know that I was doing something stupid, and one of my friends had the courage to say, "Hey, that relationship you're in, it's got to go." Like, they risked our relationship in order to say something that would help me, even though I didn't want to hear it. There are so many different ways that we hide from one another what we really think, but a true friend is honest, and they're open, and they are willing to risk the relationship by telling the truth, knowing that if you're willing to receive the truth, it actually strengthens that relationship. So true friends are honest. They tell the truth and they say what needs to be said. And the fourth building block is counsel. Proverbs 29:5 says, "Those who flatter their neighbors are spreading nets for their feet." If you have a friend who comes to you and they're asking for advice, like, "Hey, I'm thinking about this relationship, or I'm thinking about this business opportunity, or I'm thinking about going on this trip," and if you always say, "Man, that sounds great, go for it," there's a chance that you're not bringing good counsel to them, because nobody always has good ideas, right? Sometimes we come up with ideas and we're fully convinced, like, this is the thing I need to do. And when we open up ourselves to the counsel and the wisdom of our friends, true close friends, they're willing to counsel us and to bring us wisdom and to say, "I want to help you grow. I want to share what I'm seeing." And there's this balance of challenge and reassurance. Because if you have only candor and you only have someone who is challenging you, saying, "Don't do that, don't do that, do that, do that, don't do that," they're like flight directing your life for you. Or they're bullying you. They're telling you what you should do, even though it's probably what they want to do themselves. But if you have somebody who's constantly just reassuring you, Proverbs says they're spreading a net for you at your feet. You're going to get caught. You're falling into a trap, and your friend is actually helping to spread that net out for you. So we have constant relationship, highs and lows. They're reliable. They're careful. They know us. They understand us. And they can be sensitive to sort of how we're wired and how we're built. They bring candor. They tell us the truth, and they say the things that need to be said. And they bring us counsel. They help us to grow by sharing what's inside of them as we share what's inside of us. And together we are challenged and reassured in balance. So true friendship cannot only be discovered, it has to be forged. But it can't only be forged, it has to be discovered. And no relationship is going to have all four of these elements from the get-go. But if you think just for a second, looking at that list of four things right there, constant, careful, candor, counsel, there's probably a chance that there's one of these that you're naturally really good at. And there's probably one of these that you just really struggle with. for me, the one I struggle with the most is the first one, constant. And it's not because I don't want to be in the highs with people and I don't want to be in the lows with people. And I'm tempted to make lots of excuses and defenses for myself right now. But what it comes down to is that what's in front of me is what I see, and I'm going to give 100% to what's right in front of me. But when I move to a different state, like Oklahoma, man, I did not do a good job of maintaining close, true relationships with anybody back here in Indiana. And so I was gone for 4 years, and we didn't know we were coming back, but we came back, and in a lot of ways, I had to start over. Sure, there was like shared experiences that we had from 5 years ago, and there was sort of understanding how each other works at sort of a basic level. But even with social media, I didn't do a great job of staying constant, of celebrating and mourning with my friends that I had close relationships with when I was here. And so for me, constant is what I'm not great at. Just because if it's not in front of me, it's easier to just focus on what is in front of me. And so that's something I need to work on. And I need to work on that in existing relationships. And there are relationships that have fallen out of that 5, into the 15, into the 150. And sometimes that's going to happen. Those aren't sort of static circles. You can't just define, these are my 5 and you're good forever. People with different events and different things that happen in life, people are going to flow between those circles, and that's natural and that's okay. And we don't need to feel guilty about it. But if we look at this list of 4 things and we see that there's one thing that we clearly do not do well over and over again, and we don't do it well in multiple relationships, then I think the Proverbs would tell us, I think God would have us understand that's something that you need to work on. That's something that you need to develop in order to be a true friend, to be a close friend to those that you care about. Now, up to this point, just like Matt's message last week, everything in this first half of the message is universally applicable, right? Everyone has friendships, no matter your faith, your background, where you live, what country you're in. Friendships matter. They're important. And so you can sort of take what I've said so far and run with it. Like, that is going to help you. You're going to have improved and better relationships. But there's actually a uniqueness to Christian friendship that I want to walk through, and that's what we're going to spend the rest of our time looking at. That there's something unique that happens when you talk about friendships in the context of Christian community, of people following after Jesus. So if you have a Bible, you can go ahead and get that out. John chapter 15. It's so interesting that Cliff read something up here, completely unplanned, that referenced John 15:15, and I've been planning for a week to talk about John 15. So take that as you will. So in John chapter 15, starting in verse 13, it says, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other." So Jesus is setting out for us here the definition, the mark of a true friend. Remember I said earlier, like, I felt sort of squishy about it. I felt sort of, it just felt sort of nice and quaint. When I sat down and read through this and I saw how John chapter 15, and then it connects to 1 John, the whole letter, I saw this definition of friendship that I had actually never seen before. And it gave me so much energy and so much excitement to step into how Jesus defines friendship. So, first verse, verse 13, Jesus defines the greatest love. He says, the greatest love, the greater love is this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Then he says, you are my friends if you do what I command. So we know love is at the heart of every friendship. And that the great friends, the great love, sacrifices for one another. And we know that we can be friends of Jesus if we follow his commands. So, what does he command? Jump to the end of that passage, and he says, this is my command. Love each other. Usually when someone says, I have something for you, now here's what you can do to get it, it usually is reciprocated. You're giving something back to the person that's going to give you something. But Jesus actually flips that around and says, hey, I'm going to call you friend. And as a friend, I'm willing to give up my life for you. and you are my friend, and I call you my friend if you obey this command. You would expect it to be something that we're doing back to Jesus directly. But he actually says that his command is love everybody else. And that's how we know that we love Jesus. There's this interesting circle that's going on that we can't earn Jesus' love. He's not saying, hey, if you go love people, then I will love you, and then I'll die, and then I'll call you a friend. Jesus is actually telling us, I'm calling you friends right now. And this is how I will know that you understand what that means. And this is how I will know that you've gotten it, that you've stepped into the relationship that I have already initiated. It's if you love one another, and that the love I'm giving you is pouring out from you into other people. Instead, he says that we need to love one another. We need to be great friends to one another. We're showing this love of Jesus, and we're taking a hold of what he has made possible by loving other people. And what we take a hold of is a friendship with Jesus, the Son of God. He's offering us a relationship with the Creator, with the loving, living God. And so we obey this command. We are called friends of Jesus, and it's this life-giving, love-producing, sacrificial, other-oriented cycle that defines friendship, that defines the core of all of our relationships, and the basis is this greatest love. And like I said, if you really want to dig into this, read all of chapter 15, and then go read 1 John. It's the same person writing, and he just sort of zooms in and just focuses on relationships and how to be united and how to experience that love. And since Jesus is the source of life for us, and since we have this opportunity to be in relationship with him, to be a friend with him, it actually does something for our relationships with each other. Because we have a relationship with Jesus, because he has opened up that possibility, it actually allows us to freely enter into relationships with one another, because you and I both know that friendships with other people are hard, and they're risky, and they're challenging, and we get hurt, and we get wounded, and we get broken, and then we get defensive. But when we're connected to Jesus, and Jesus has called us friend, that's the source of life. That's the sort of assurance that we are looking for, usually in our relationships with people. And with that assurance that our value is secure in Jesus, that our self-worth is secure through him, then we can enter into those relationships with other people. And if they hurt us, and if they break us, and if they wound us, we grieve that, we process that, but we remember at our core that the living God is our friend, and that he has sacrificed his son for us so that we can be a friend of God. Jesus exemplifies this friendship. You've probably all seen the t-shirt, or at least like the picture that says, Jesus is my homeboy. I think that makes a really good t-shirt, but that probably doesn't make a great definition of friendship. Jesus is defining his core relationship with us as friend. He says, I no longer call you servants. Though we serve him, he says, you are my friend. If you think back to those four characteristics, right? Jesus is constant. He's always ready for us to ask, to seek, and to knock. He wants to answer. He has initiated the relationship and is inviting us in. He is careful. He knows the ins and outs of our lives. He knows what will offend us. He knows what will challenge us. He knows what we fear. He knows things about ourselves that we do not know. He brings candor. Jesus shines light on area of our lives that we do not want light shining, that we would rather keep to ourselves, to keep hidden, that no other person may know, but Jesus knows it, and he puts the light on it because he knows that life does not happen in darkness. He knows that in order to experience life, healing, forgiveness, those dark and broken parts of us have to be brought into the light, and so he's honest with us. He tells us the truth with candor. He won't let us stay where we are, even though he accepts us right where we are. And as Romans says, while we were sinners, Christ died for us. So he brings us honesty. And he is the counselor. He guides us. He gives us wisdom. He gives us one another in order to grow. He gives us forgiveness, grace, and the peace that we need to become who we were made to be. and so that we can help to build up the kingdom and enter into eternal life. Now, if you follow Jesus and you understand this true deep sense of friendship, it actually opens up a really radical and enriching opportunity for us in this world, in the here and now, that we can connect with people who are very, very different from us. In fact, people that we would otherwise never give the time of day. If you think back to the Old Testament, right, the sort of mission and part of sort of the culture was, is that God's chosen people, Israel, were to be separated. They were to be set apart. And they were going to be like a city on a hill. They were going to be a light. They were going to be shining out as an example to everybody else, but they were to be separate, to be separated. But Jesus is doing something new here. He is saying, everyone's welcome. Everyone gets to come in. Everyone can be a friend of mine. And that was the plan all along. Like, it's not that Jesus said, man, Old Testament, that stuff was messed up. And now I'm going to set things right. Now, that was the plan all along. The people of Israel were supposed to be a light to the nations in order to help them see the one true God and let them know that a relationship would be possible. And Jesus makes that a reality. And he says, this isn't just for the insiders. This isn't just for the outsiders. This is for everyone. A relationship with the living God. The good news, that's part of the good news. It's not just that Jesus came and that he died and that he was resurrected, though that is sort of a crucial part of the good news. Part of the good news that we forget is that it's for everybody. Everybody is invited into this banquet. Everybody is invited into this relationship. Now, if you think back to what I said, is that true close friendships have a shared common perspective. But now I'm saying that Jesus inviting us all in means that we can be friends with anybody and that we can have friendships with people that we would otherwise never give the time of day to. That seems like a bad strategy, or at the very least contradictory, right? Why would I want to develop a relationship with somebody that I have nothing in common with, whether they're a Christian or not? Well, on a very practical level, none of us have an objective perspective on the world, right? Even on ourselves, we don't even fully see and understand ourselves. And so when we entertain the idea that other people have perspectives that we don't have, we sort of explode our worldview little by little. There's a term, I don't know how new it is, but it's called the echo chamber. And it really comes up when you talk about social media, that people tend to follow people on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, and they tend to follow people like them. I mean, think about the news sources that we pick, right? We pick the news sources that we go, that seems like good reporting. But we don't often listen to the news that we go, man, I just don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's accurate. So we end up building these sort of echo chambers where we essentially build up a circle of people around us who are parroting back to us the things that we already believe and already understand and don't need anybody else to tell us. They're just reinforcing what we already know. And so as followers of Jesus, where everyone's invited into his kingdom, we can actually explode this echo chamber by inviting other perspectives into our lives. Other perspectives on the world, on hot topics, on all those kinds of things, yes. But maybe even more importantly, other perspectives on ourselves and the way that we interact with the world. So we blow up this echo chamber. That's one good reason to develop relationships. There are people who don't know Jesus. And if you only interact with people who do know Jesus, and if we all did that, then there are people who don't know Jesus that will never hear about Jesus. And so in this everyone's invited sort of party, it's actually good and important that we invite other people into the circle of 150, into the circle of 15, and say, we're going to be friends. Even though we don't have everything in common, we should be friends because Jesus commanded we should love each other. But for those of you who are followers of Jesus, you're sitting in a room full of many other Jesus followers, and there's a decent chance that we don't all agree on everything. Decent chance. So even in being here right now, we're experiencing grace. One of the core values of our church is shared grace. We have a common way. And that centerpiece is Jesus. And so no matter what other differences we have, at least for an hour and a half on Sundays, we've decided to set those differences aside, that they are secondary, or maybe not even secondary, they're like way down the list. And that the most important thing is that we come together once a week and we sing songs and we listen to the word and we encourage one another. because Jesus is the most important thing. And so there are many great relationships in this room that are happening because of that shared perspective that Jesus is Lord. And so that can be a unifying thing across so many boundaries that we otherwise set up to divide ourselves with. There's a power and there's a beauty in being united by Christ. Again, we sit here on Sunday mornings and we don't actually fully know the things that we disagree on, because most of us, we come in and we talk to the six or seven or eight people that we know or that we sit with regularly. You sit in your it's not an assigned seat, but from my perspective, some of you feel like you have assigned seats. But you talk to those few people and then you head out and maybe you have lunch and that's good. But the reality is that there is such a confluence of different thoughts on politics, on relationships, on clothing, on musical styles, on all kinds of things that we willingly choose to say, you know what, that's not as important as us getting together to sing. That's not as important as us getting together to hear what God has for us today. And so we come together. But the reality is that we can do even better. Because even sitting in this room and looking out right now, there's a lot of commonality. And I would love to see in this room more diversity in a lot of different ways. Because Jesus is the one thing that can unite the whole city, the whole country, the whole world. Now you might object a little bit to everything that I've said so far, and you might say, I am not great at making friends. I don't even know where to start meeting people, and if I'm honest, I'm afraid that it's going to be weird or awkward or creepy, or I might be accidentally judgmental by trying to make friends with somebody that I think that's different than me, but it turns out they're not different than me, and so then I've judged them, and now we can't be friends because I judged them. It's overwhelming. It's terrifying to think about how to make friends, right? I think most of us feel that way at one time or another. Even extroverts feel a certain sense of trepidation or just worry about, man, I don't know how to get to know that person. They look cool, but I wouldn't even know where to start. Some people feel really embarrassed to even say, I don't have any close friends. That's not something that people usually walk around and admit, because who would they admit it to, right? That wasn't supposed to be mean. We should all be friends. Let me just say that real quick. But here's the thing about friendships, is that it can feel really overwhelming and we get really worked up. Okay, we've got to have friendships and it's not magic, so we've got to be intentional. And how do we put ourselves in a position to where we can be great friends? But let me just sort of bring the pressure down. Because when we talk about friendship, we have a great advantage in that there is a creator who is intentionally involved in our lives, active in our lives in ways that we can't even fully understand or see. And Jesus says it himself in verse 16. He says, you did not choose me, but I chose you. And I think in the same way, when it comes to our friendships, he can say, you did not choose each other, but I chose you for each other. And so yes, there are specific things that we can do. When you're here on a Sunday morning, you can say hi to someone that you've never said hi to. You can be in a small group and you can develop relationship with people who otherwise you may not hang out with on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. But the reality is that no matter what we do, we have a loving God whose command was to love each other, and he's not just putting us out there to sort of figure it out on our own. He's actually weaving us together. He's building us in the context of us, right? Like, he's developing me as an individual, but he's developing us as a church, and he's developing us as a body, as a whole body in the whole church, and he's developing this kingdom. And so when we think about these relationships, maybe you would be the person who says, I don't have any close friendships today. Just know that God wants you to. And not only does he want you to, he is working on it right now. Even through me talking right now, man, my hope and my prayer and my belief is that this is going to spark individuals in this room reaching out. Maybe you don't have close friends, and so you take a risk and you invite someone to lunch. Or maybe you sign up to get into a small group. Or you say hi to the person that sits two cubicles over that you know their name, but you have worked there for 5 years and you've never had a conversation. You might have a shared perspective on the world. And even if you don't, Jesus says everyone's invited. We can love each other because ultimately our security, our identity, our value is secure in our friendship with Jesus. So we think that we have chosen our own friends, but he's actually choosing them for us. There's a C.S. Lewis quote. It's a really long one, but in essence, it comes down to this. He says, "You have never met an ordinary person. You've never met a mere mortal. We are all created by God. We are all children of God. We are all invited into that friendship." And so you're walking down the street, you're sitting at the lunch table, you're in the office. You're not surrounded by just sort of a numberless mass, right? There's people beyond that 1,500 circle. There are people beyond the 150 that you communicate with regularly. But that's part of the hard challenge, right? Is that there are so many people, we can't possibly know and love all of them. Jesus didn't say, you need to love every single person. He said, love each other. And that sounds particularly focused on individuals to me. So don't think about building up your 150. Don't think even specifically like, okay, I've got to secure a solid 15. But think about, who are the people that I can be constant with? Who are the people that I can have candor with? Think through those four building blocks and say, who do I have the opportunity to be a good, close, true friend with? And I will bet you almost anything that as soon as you look at the world and you look at other people through that lens, do I have an opportunity to love this person? Do I have an opportunity to invite them in to this friendship that I have with Jesus? I am almost certain that you will still see people left and right. Not only that you want to connect with, but people who need someone to connect with them. Romans 12:5 says, "We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other." So we gather here on Sundays, and I am so thankful for it. I am so energized by seeing you guys and your faithfulness to be here and to show up and to be engaged. I love it. But the truth is that you cannot build a true friendship, a close friendship, on a Sunday morning. You can discover friendships, and I actually hope that you do. We want you to discover good friends here at Commonway. But you can't actually forge those on a Sunday morning. And that's part of why we do small groups. We go from the big circles and we focus in and we say, there's 350 people, I'm guessing, in this room right now. 350 people, maybe 400. How do we get that circle down to where we actually have relationships? I've heard it said from many people, many of you who are actually here, who said, man, I love coming to Commonway because it's super easy to get in. It's super easy to come and show up and feel comfortable and not threatened. So it's easy to discover this place. I've actually heard similar people say, but you know what? It took me a year and a half until I actually felt like I had friends that I could talk to. And that challenges me as the connections pastor. But I hope that challenges you too. Because there are a lot of us who have been coming here for 3-4 years, even predating and going back 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And there are people who show up here. We had 400 people show up for the first time and fill out a card last year. 400 people. That is so awesome. I love that we have a church that is easy to connect to get in the door and feel comfortable. But where I think that we can grow as a church and as individuals is forging those relationships, of making those connections so that people say, man, I love my church. Yeah, the teaching's really good. Yeah, the music's really good. Yeah, it feels really comfortable. But I have people there who I know love me and care about me. They are in the highs. They are in the lows. They are honest with me. They bring me wisdom and counsel. And they help me draw closer to my friendship with Jesus. That's what building this community should look like, is forging small circles of relationships that make us a stronger community at the bigger circle level. So really practical. Next Sunday, we're having a lunch right after service, and it's a small group connection lunch. We've done this a couple different ways, but this time around, we're just going to have a lunch right after church at the Innovation Connector. And if you would say, I don't feel like I know anybody here, it doesn't matter how long you've been coming, if this is your first Sunday or you've been here for 2 years, if you would say, I don't really feel like I have people that I talk to on Sunday mornings, or if you would say, I really want to get into a community where I can talk with people about what it means to follow Jesus, or I want to understand the Bible better, or I just want to have something to do on Tuesday nights, If any of those things ring true to you, if you're feeling something inside of yourself right now as you listen to this, write on your card that you've got. Just write small groups on there. Put your name and your email address. We want you to be at this lunch because this is how we get people connected. We can do it at any time of the year. We're always watching. We're always inviting people into community. But this is the easiest and the best way to do it, to come to this lunch. And worst case, you get a free lunch. Best case, you find true friendship. There's a quote. I couldn't find who it was from, but it's a quote that stuck with me, and I've been thinking about it a lot as I was preparing this. And it said, "Belief is a terrible basis for belonging." So we don't invite people to be a part of Common Way because they believe what we believe. And in the same way, I don't want to invite people into friendship with me just because they believe what I believe. We invite people in because Jesus invited people in. And he said, "I'm your friend. I'm laying my life down for you. And because of that, I want you to go and love other people." And it's really easy to think about the big scale problems in the world and say, "What can I do about that?" But there's 400 people sitting in this room right now that you can't have a direct impact on. You're not going to have a direct impact on all 400. But who's in your circle? Who are the people that are influencing you? Who are the people that you are influencing? Just a couple of closing thoughts here. Statistically, 50% of you guys aren't in groups. And that's okay. I'm not saying that to shame you, to judge you. But looking at our numbers, about half of people who are here on a Sunday aren't a part of a group. And you might say, "I've got strong relationships. I'm secure. I'm grounded. Things are going really well relationally." But what I would encourage you to think about is the people who are here that don't have that. What role can you play in their life? Even if you are solid and you feel like you've got good relationships, think about the other people. What value might they benefit from you being in their small group, from you having lunch once a month? You might be an influencer in their circle of 15. And as I was sort of looking things up, I actually went to see, like, I wanted some specific stats to Muncie. Like, what does it look like in Muncie for relationships? And I couldn't find a lot of great stats that I felt like I could share up here, just because there's a lot of different sources and long articles. But I did find one report that came from Ball Memorial Hospital, and it said this. 30% of people in Muncie specific, not Delaware County, but specifically in Muncie, 30% of people in Muncie struggle with chronic depression and anxiety. So if we've got 400 people here, 30% is 120 people in this room right now are struggling with those things. And it's, I get it, depression, anxiety, those are complicated things that have many different underpinnings. But I can guarantee you that close relationships do not make those symptoms worse. Those realities do not get harder with close friendships. So there's a reality in our sphere, in our city, that we can make a difference in the lives of people because there's real need, there's real hurt. And not only can we be made stronger, but we can help other people be stronger as well. I'm going to call the band back up just for a closing song. But just as they come up, just remember that each of us has the opportunity to be the friend that we want, right? That's sort of the golden rule, do unto others. Well, think about it in the lens of friendship. We want great friends. So what kind of a friend am I being to those around us? God's not building just us as individuals, but he's building us in the context of this church and of this city and in our communities. So we go out and we remember that Jesus doesn't call us servants, he calls us friends, and he invites us to love each other. And in that invitation, he's opened up the doors wide open so that there's no more barrier and division about who we should know and who we can like and who we can love. But he said, love each other. Let's pray. Father God, we thank you for this time. And I just pray, God, that you would use us to reach out to one another. That as we think about our friendships and our relationships, you would just help us to be constant. That you would help us to be honest, to be careful. That you would help us to be counsel to one another, God. That as you grow us and develop us as individuals, God, you would knit us into these relationships that don't just serve us, but that we can serve others, that we can push out beyond our boundaries, God, and that we can unite around the friendship that we have in Jesus. Help us just to strip away the stuff that feels scary and that feels like risk, to step into that with courage and to say, you know what? I want better relationships. I want to be a better friend. I want to help build a community known for their love. They will know we are followers of Jesus because of our love. Help us, God, just to take on a hold of that and to step into these next days and weeks, God, just with the lens of who can we love? How can we be better friends? And who are we influencing and who is influencing us? It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.